Welcome to Remember Me by Intervivos, the show about living life to its fullest, leaving a legacy, and deciding how you will be remembered. And now, your humble team of expert planners, taking the legal world by storm.
Hi, welcome to Remember Me, the show where we talk about leaving a legacy and deciding how you'll be remembered. We're here in the studio, and we're talking today about kind of a continuation from what we talked about last week, which is, you know, leaving a legacy for generation after generation. A lot of times we consider, you know, what would we do to be able to leave a legacy of money and to leave value and assets from generation to generation. And, you know, that's a lot of what we talked about last week. But a legacy consists of a lot of things. And, you know, some of the most powerful families and, you know, individuals in history and in our society have been able to maintain that power within within the family or within, you know, their organization for years and years and years, because not only did they leave money, but they left, you know, relationships and connections and the values behind what they were doing, right?
Right. You know, I was just thinking about that. You know, I used to be involved with the community theater. It was this little tiny one out in Linden, and the family had been doing theater. They were in that for years, you know, decades. And that theater they had, they had the longest running play, continuous play. It had been running like 25, 28 years before that they actually closed the theater, and it's no longer running. But that family has a really good relationship with a lot of people. And it's not just theater people. It's, you know, it's consumers with, you know, local shops and local businesses and things like that. And that family still has influence because of the name. They have influence and they know each other. And it's something that's like a little family. But, you know, I'm thinking about that. How is that going to continue if the family doesn't keep it going?
You know, they talk about when you're born, you know, the legacy that all of us receive, right? And it's a theme that they touch on in movies and that sort of thing. But the legacy that every single one of us pretty much get is we get a name, and we get, you know, a heritage of, you know, our ancestry
and genealogy.
You know, yeah. Genealogy. But that's kind of just built in when we come here, right?
Right.
And so, a lot of times, you know, we focus in on the name and what that means. What does it mean to be, you know, a Black? And, you know, what does that mean for who you should be, or you know, what privileges you have access to in society, or, you know, that sort of thing. That's really interesting, I think, to explore. It's been the subject of, you know, literature and all kinds of stuff over the years.
You know, it's funny because, you know, as we were just talking, I was thinking about A Knight's Tale.
Yeah.
And he was a Thatcher. He was going to be a Thatcher. He was pawned off into a knight, and he was his squire at the time. And he wanted to change his stars, you know. And how did he change that? He actually he got some good breaks, but he also worked towards it. But it made his family proud that he could actually do that. And his name now is not tied just to that. You know, he changed his name for a little while, but then at the very end, he came out and I can't remember his first name, but Thatcher. And he was, you know, born in this hometown and all this kind of stuff. It was really kind of cool. And then it brought the whole town together because, you know, somebody could do it.
And then what does it do for a family, for your future generations and all the people that are somehow connected to you? It's not just your kids, but their kids and their kids. And then also the, you know, your nieces and nephews and everything else. When somebody breaks the mold, and
right,
they become famous, or they become, you know, whatever, then all of a sudden the name means something that maybe it never meant before, but it's a new legacy, a new heritage that you're
right,
leaving, right? And the question is, will that be perpetuated, or is that something that's just going to be, you know, the high point of your family, and then everybody talks about it, but it never becomes part of who they are.
Right. And I think that's the challenge, too, because, you know, people now, when they say that when people win the lottery, there's all of a sudden they have a lot of friends show up, right? And the same thing with people being famous. When or some kind of something like that comes up. It's some kind of notoriety that shows, you know, happens to them. All of a sudden, they've got family that they're so proud of them. We always knew you could make it. You know, always knew this, always knew that. But then where do they go after the notoriety wears off? You know, how do you pass those? How do you pass those relationships on? How do you pass those things on and perpetuate them and make it so it's not just with you? How do you keep it with everybody, you know, with your family, with your kids, with your grandkids, great-grandkids?
There's a trend, and it's gotten pretty big lately with Ancestry and what's the DNA one?
Ancestry.com.
No, 23andMe. Yeah, 23andMe.
I've never heard of that one.
There's a whole bunch of these different companies now that, you know, they focus on helping you to understand your genealogy through DNA testing and that sort of thing. And I think a big part of why it's taken off so much is that people really do want to know, you know, what background did they come from? And maybe it means nothing to you except the significance that you put on it for yourself.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of people who receive their reports now know, you know, well, my ancestors came from, and what does that mean for me? Right.
Right.
And it helps to inform our identity.
You know, I was just thinking, because going back to the knight's tale, they had to prove their genealogy.
Yeah, in medieval times.
They had to prove that they were born of nobility in order to compete.
Yeah, their seal, their family seal.
Yeah.
And they had to prove that, you know, and back in the, you know, the oral history days of, you know, oral tradition, tribal sort of societies and stuff, they had to know off the top of their head, they had to be able to say, you know, I'm so-and-so, son of so-and-so, son of so-and-so, who was married to so-and-so. And you look in the Bible, and, you know, it's all over.
So many begat.
Right, but it's because the genealogy mattered.
Yes. And, you know, and I guess that's where tribal knowledge comes from, too, because you have to know what your tribe stands for and who it's with horses or anything. You have to know that heritage and that legacy and that...
the pedigree,
the
right?
Pedigree. Yeah. That's the word I was thinking of. I should have remembered that, because we raised horses.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting because there's been a lot of studies done on you know, psychological studies and studies that have to do with this kind of aspect of things. One of the studies talks about how we've heard in the past, right, royalty always used to just marry royalty.
Right.
Well, it started causing a problem when... You know,
it started getting a little bit. The gene pool is getting a little
is
a little shallow.
all similar to each other, and so they've shown that, you know, more diversity, right, in the gene pool produces stronger results, right?
Right.
But then, what does that do? The more diversity that there is in your background and your heritage and so on, or the more that it's separated from you, then what does that do with the strength of the culture that's being passed on from generation to generation, right?
Yeah, so, that's true. Because, you know, my wife, if you look at my wife, she's Hawaiian, she's Chinese, and her mom was majority Scottish, I believe, so she's got a lot of difference.
So how strong is the Scottish culture in her?
Not very strong, other than the freckles.
How strong is the Chinese culture in her?
Not as strong as the Polynesian is. She like, because the family focuses on the Polynesian. I'm thinking she's just as much Chinese as she is, you know, Hawaiian, you know, and she's more Scottish than she is anything. But, you know, you're right. Those things don't get passed down.
It's interesting. You know, my kids, we always wanted them to learn Spanish. I'm a second generation immigrant, right? So my mom was a first generation immigrant. And then, you know, growing up, I had the opportunity to learn Spanish. I learned it in high school as well, and I have had the opportunity to use it over the years. And so we wanted to raise our kids learning Spanish. But it's difficult, right? Now there's a third generation. It's difficult to get them to have interest in the Latino culture at all, right? Right.
And your wife's Hispanic too, isn't she?
Yeah, yeah. So, but again, you know, half.
Half, okay.
So just half, like, from me, half from her, uh-huh. They're just as half
they're like my wife
as me,
yeah.
But the culture hasn't been passed down to them as much as it was passed down to me.
Right. You know, and I guess that happens in that's there's been studies done. The second generation, they learn both languages very well. Third generation, they suddenly forget. or not so much forget, but they have no interest in it, like you just said.
And it's not just the language, but also the traditions and so on and so forth. So we'll explore this more when we come back. This is being sponsored by InterVivos, Estate Planning Solutions. If you have questions about planning for your future and being able to leave a legacy like what we've been talking about, contact us, 801-477-1570, 801-477-1570. We'll be back after the break. We'll be back in just a second talking about leaving a legacy and deciding how you'll be remembered. Thanks for listening in to Remember Me.
Yeah, and I think when we come back, we're going to be talking about things like, you know, the culture. I like the culture because, you know, think that's important to my family because my wife, she started some traditions that she had when she was a kid, and now we're trying to pass those down to our kids. So those kinds of things I think are going to be something we can explore.
Welcome back to Remember Me, the show where we talk about leaving a legacy and living life to its fullest and deciding how you'll be remembered. We're talking about, you know, leaving your culture and leaving the essence of your values and who you are to the next generation so it doesn't get lost and you can, you know, perpetuate that from generation to generation. And a lot of times it gets watered down as you go. Mike, you were telling us during the break about how in your family you have, you know, pirates and Indians and
I've got all sorts of culture there. Yeah, I'm trying not to perpetuate the pirate culture. But, you know, when I was about 10, my parents got married, and we had horses. Well, Grandpa and Grandma had horses, and my dad was a really big horseman. And when I went to the basement the first time we had, well, we'd go up there for Sunday ice cream every year, every week. And I went down to the basement. There's a saddle, big silver saddle, and trophies bigger than me, and silver platters and silver all over the place. And it was just like a museum. And I was thinking, you know, well, we had one stallion, and he, like I was telling you, he was the grand champion, Intermountain grand champion, never been beat. And he was a fine harness. And over the years, you know, Dad tried to keep it going after Grandpa passed away, but the kids couldn't really get into it. And now the stable's gone. I mean, it was a really big deal. I mean, he was the president of the American Saddlebred Association. And you've heard of, what's his name? Captain Kirk. William Shatner. He actually owned a horse that was actually one of ours, out of one of our stallions. And it's William Shatner's a big horseman as well. But as the kids go along, my youngest brother is probably the best. And my youngest sister also could have been the best horseman. She's still into animals and everything, but my brother, we don't have horses. Nobody in the family has horses except for Allie.
And a couple generations down, they might not even remember.
Part
of the family.
Yeah, because I remember the sign, you know, Huffman Stables, Homer Sermingo, Sire of Champions. And he, you know, it was a really big drawing place because we had a lot of champion animals there.
If anybody's seen the show Coco, right, our namesake song,
Coco.
Right? the story's all about this family who, you know, the great-great-grandmother thought that her husband had run off and he was a musician, so she banned music from the family, right? And so four generations down, there's this kid who loves music and he has to hide it from his family because none of them approve of musicians, right?
Right.
And so it's interesting because sometimes our decisions and what we choose to perpetuate to, you know, the stories we tell and how we, you know, transfer our traditions really makes a difference. And there's a concept of the seven generations. We're the link for the three generations before us.
And three generations after.
The three generations after us. I had the opportunity to meet my great-great-grandfather. My kids never had that opportunity. There are lessons that I, you know, learned from him that you know, then become part of who I am, and I can choose to pass those on even to my great-great-grandchildren if I live long enough to meet them. But they'll never hear it from the generations that came before me because, you know, there's just a moment in time that we're here, and we're linked to the people who we're able to interact with while we're here, right? And so I think in a lot of ways there's a responsibility for us to choose what we're going to pass on so that those things aren't just forgotten and aren't just lost.
You know, I was thinking about that because my grandfather used to tell us stories about, you know, our history and about certain aspects of my grandfather's and, you know, how we came across the plains and all that kind of thing. And I was just thinking, you know, I've told stories to my kids, and my kids, you know, they just kind of roll their eyes. Oh, Dad, you've told this story 100 times. We know the story by heart. But I don't know if they do. I don't know if they'll tell those stories later on. But so it's something I'm a little bit concerned about because I've lost a little bit of it. But I think it's important for me to tell my kids and for them to understand that this is going to be part of their heritage. They're going to want to do the same thing for their kids.
I remember growing up, and, you know, I've only been to El Salvador, where my mom's from, once. But I remember wanting to go to see, you know, where was it that they lived? And I always heard these stories about, you know, what it was like.
Oh, yeah, that would
during
be
the
really
Civil
interesting.
War and all this stuff that, you know, they escaped from. But then being there and being able to have the context of it, you know, means more. And so, you know, the families that have this strong tradition of passing down, you know, who was it that came before and what did they do and where did they come from and, you know, why did they do what they do, right? It's not just about telling the stories, but also giving the context, because the story without the expression of values and the context to put it in doesn't explain why decisions were made, right?
Right. I think that's the important thing, having the context. Going back to the Coco story, that whole decision was made on a fallacy, because it wasn't the person she thought was that, mm-hmm. you know, had, you know, he didn't leave her. He was killed.
Well, and the context, a lot of times, you know, we have the tendency of people who, you know, they look into their genealogy, they find out that their great-great-grandfather was a horse thief or whatever. Oh, we don't talk about that guy anymore, right? But once you know the context, then a lot of times those things are explained away, right? I remember I was talking with somebody not too long ago that they were saying that they had a relative who was in the German army during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know that they were part of the German army, but you know, they found out after Grandpa passed away, oh, he was on that side of the war, right? We knew he served in World War II. We found out he was on that side, right? But understanding the context of history, it's not necessarily something to be ashamed of. It's just something to understand.
And, you know, for him, he may not have had a choice.
Exactly.
You know, and in given those circumstances, you see all these movies about the good people like Schindler's List and things like that, where they knew they could get in trouble. They knew they could be, you know, a life-threatening thing, incident, but they still did it anyway. And I know that happened on that side because there's a lot of good people.
You know, if you never talk about it, if it becomes taboo, then you don't hear the stories about, I mean, all these stories that we hear, even you see them in the movies also, of the German soldiers who look the other way, even though they knew that somebody was hiding somewhere. But what about those stories?
Right? Well, you know, I got one of those stories too, because there's a kid when I was younger, his dad was actually slated to go to Auschwitz. And he told him he was Mormon, and then they said, okay, you don't have to go. He was a newly convert, you know, and that was one of those soldiers that just looked the other way, let him go. And he told that story in church one day, and I thought, you know, it didn't mean anything to me when I was 11 years old, but thinking about it later on, it means a lot.
And then, you know, once you know the context, and you know, in this situation, the I don't even remember who it was I was talking with that told me about their ancestor that was in World War II, but they were so disillusioned with the war that's why they immigrated, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big part of their family's story, is why they even came to the United States. Well, it was because the war was so horrible and everything that, you know, they wanted to get away.
Mm-hmm.
And then he became an entrepreneur and everything else once he was over here. And it's just, you know, that's a rich part of their history that, never really got communicated because maybe it was something that they were ashamed of, or maybe it was something that they didn't want to talk about. And so, you know, what really the powerful families that that really perpetuate and kind of transfer this this culture from generation to generation and keep it within the family, it's not about just transferring the assets, but it's also about transferring the relationships and the, you know, the name recognition mm-hmm. and the connections that you build over time. There was a study done actually talking about, you know, the poverty class focuses most on relationships, but they focus on relationships in the sense of what is somebody doing for me, right?
Right.
And, you know, who owes me favors, kind of, right? And then you go up into the kind of middle class, and what they value the most is education, right?
Right.
When you get into the upper middle class and upper class, then really, you know, that's when the money, the focus begins being money, right? A lot more.
Right.
But when you get into the ultra wealthy, it goes right back to relationships and the favors that, right, that you have, and the credibility and the connections that you have, because you can make one call. And it can totally change. You can get something that's priceless by making a phone call that you couldn't ever get with any amount of money.
Right. And I think it also, when they get to that point, they start thinking of who can I influence, who can I help, and who can I serve.
It's about the influence. More than, yeah. And then that's just lost if there's no transfer of those relationships or of that...
those values.
Yeah, and the understanding behind it of the influence, right? It's one thing to know... Well, Dad used to know, you know, let's say President Trump, right? Well, Dad used to know President Trump, and they were on speaking terms. Great. What about now, right?
Yep. What about now?
And so, so really finding a way to transfer those connections, relationships, and also the family stories and values and so on and so forth. That's what we'll explore more next week. So join us next week. We'll have a special guest. This is Remember Me, where we talk about leaving a legacy and deciding how you'll be remembered, sponsored by InterVivos, and we'll talk to you soon.